fog had rolled in as I was having my chin wag with Monahan, so I hiked up the collar on my coat to keep out the damp as I made my way toward the bus stop. God must have decided Mrs. Mandolin's baby boy needed some help. The brine soup was so thick that there was no way Rorsch, if he tried the sniper gig, could make a clean shot from any rooftop. I wasn't even entirely sure a shot could have been made from across the street. The fog was as thick as I'd ever seen it. The sidewalk remained as crowded as ever, even though you couldn't see the pedestrians from 10 feet away. Some of the people jolted my elbows.
Oh!
A woman walked right into me. She looked up and then backed away.
Pardon me.
No problem. As she passed me, I caught a whiff of something familiar and turned. Excuse me, miss?
Yes?
That perfume you're wearing.
I have to go.
I'm sorry to bother you, but my wife pointed it out to me a couple of weeks ago and I haven't been able to find it. Might as well pull out all the stops. It's our 10th anniversary and I'd like to surprise her. She relaxed. I was just a safe, worried husband shopping for his sweetheart.
Ah, it's called Mediterranean Nights. You can find it at the perfume counter in Naughton's.
Thanks. I gave her a smile in return and continued working my way to the bus stop. That woman's perfume was the same scent I noticed on the bodies of each of the killer's victims. A little bit stronger, perhaps, but still the same. I filed the woman's looks away for reference, just in case. She didn't appear to be capable of murder, but I'd been wrong before. Twice, I think. Naughton's fronted Union Square, a high-priced venue if ever there was one. The perfume counter sat just inside the twin glass door sets. The polished brass edging on the counters joined with the imported marble pillars to ward off those plebeians among us. One of the best ways to get the girls who work for the upper-end stores to pay attention to you is to look like you have money. Unfortunately, that is not one of my many attributes. My usual wardrobe looks like it had a previous life as a dog bed. I know the girl saw me. She looked right at me. Perhaps it was the little sneer she added to the look. Maybe it was something else, but right then, I decided to play hardball with the little diva. Several years ago, I had acquired a very convincing copy of a Metro Detective's badge. I kept it in my pocket just in case the need to use it ever came around. Excuse me, miss? The clerk's reaction was everything I could have hoped for and more. Shock replaced outrage, and then uncertain fear settled in as I held up the badge just long enough for her not to read it.
What? I haven't done anything wrong.
I put on my best deadpan cop face. That remains to be seen. You sell a perfume called Mediterranean Nights?
I think we do, officer. I don't remember. Yes! Yes, we do. This is one of the bottles.
The girl was so rattled, she didn't even think to ask why a weather-beaten old cop was asking about perfume. I took the bottle from her hand and held it up to the light. What does this stuff sell for?
$90 an ounce. That bottle retails for $450. Officer.
Pretty pricey for toilet water.
Pardon?
How much of this would a person have to put on to have the scent transfer to another body?
Body?
Just answer the question, miss.
Well, it's a pretty powerful scent. The manufacturer uses actual ambergris in the formula, so if you hug somebody wearing it, people could still smell it on you the next day.
She started to relax a bit. How about 2 to 3 days later?
No. For that to happen, she would have to be pouring it on her, like, aftershave. Who would do that at $90 an ounce? Besides, the scent on her would be so strong, it would drive men away, not attract them.
I put the bottle back onto the counter. Do you have a sample swatch of this perfume?
Yes, sir. We have them for all the first-line scents.
She pulled open a drawer behind the counter and pulled out a small, glossy burl wood chest. Opening the chest, she removed a small Ziploc baggie with a strip of white paper inside. A white label ran the length of the baggie. On it were the words, Mediterranean Nights. I took the baggie from her hand and decided to give her a break.
Thanks, miss. You may have helped to save a life.
And that one wasn't a whopper. To make up for my impersonation act, I called Monahan. He didn't give me a chance to give him the good news.
Monahan.
Pat, it's...
Mandolin, where the hell are you?
Gee, thanks, Pat. I love you too.
Cut the crap, Mandolin. Everyone here thought you were headed for a slab. Word's in off the street that Rorsch took you out. The man's gone mad, Tony. And there's talk he's got Schultz's boys backing him up. With Lucchesi in the mix, you could be the spark that sets off the first gang war this city's seen in over 50 years.
And you said I'd never amount to anything.
I'm serious, dammit!
So am I, Monahan. If you must know, I'm in a phone booth on post, not too far from Union Square. The fog's so thick right now that Roar should have to be using infrared to spot me.
Well, stay away from your usual hangouts.
Gee, why didn't I think of that? I'm doing just that, Pat. In fact, I was thinking about doing a bit of varmint hunting.
Don't do anything stupid, Mandolin. You don't have a badge.
Neither does Rorsch anymore. I figure that makes us even.
By the way, if a hunch I've got pans out, I'll have solved that serial killer case for you.
What?
I'll tell you later. Right now, I've got to do some shopping.
Mandolin! If you hang up, I'll...
I took the baggie out of my pocket. Monahan would forgive me if what I was thinking about panned out. What the girl at Naughton's had said about the perfume had triggered a memory. I decided to check out my theory by hitting a few stores at the marina. A sick feeling in my belly told me I was probably right. Masks was easy to find due to the giant mural of the comedy and tragedy masks covering the storefront. Customers entered the store through one of the masks. Cute. I figured that the store would be something between an art shop and the counter at Naughton's. I couldn't have been more wrong. The place looked more like the special effects department of a movie set. Looking like a convention of beheaded actors, rows of latex masks stared sightlessly at me. Some of them demonstrated bizarre special effect techniques, a few of them quite macabre.
Is Sir feeling today? Are we just browsing, or do we have a particular look in mind?
His voice, as affected as his walk, didn't get to me as much as the black velvet fedora did.
I...
I see Sir is in a good mood today.
Sorry, got a little catch in my throat.
Yes, and once Sir composes himself, will Sir be able to let one know what he requires?
Reaching into my pocket, I pulled out the Ziploc bag with its perfume sample.
I need a couple of things. One, do you know of a way to make it look like you're wearing old track marks?
One would never do such a thing. Unless, of course, the part called for it.
Actors. So there is a way.
Of course there is.
Without using a needle.
Sir, we are the theatrical makeup purveyor of this city, not a back alley. Of course, without using a needle.
I relaxed. The pieces were beginning to come together.
Thanks. Now can you tell me if you recognize this perfume?
Piquant to be sure.
He looked back up at me.
A common scent among our custom. We carry it here. Mediterranean Nights. A bit strong for one's taste, but beguiling for a few of the more playful sort.
Would it be strong enough to linger on someone the wearer touched?
Depends on what you mean by touched.
Easy, Tony. You need this guy's information.
I see. Do you have any repeat customers for this stuff? Anyone buying it in bulk?
There are a few who seem to prefer it to excess.
Any names?
One does not distribute one's client list, sir.
I wasn't asking you to. All I need to know is if you can give me some idea if some of your customers have been here over the last day or two reeking of Mediterranean Nights. A life could depend on it.
I didn't tell him the life was mine. That bit of info might have sealed his mouth for good.
Sir?
Perhaps an individual of considerable size?
Ahem.
He glanced to the side. That was all the answer I needed, and as that old chill settled into my gut, I was afraid the rest of the puzzle would fall right into place. Damn, damn, damn. Thanks. You've been a big help.
Sir?
I had already turned to head back to the street, but I could picture the look on his face. He'd be up all night wondering what he had said that had answered my question. My stomach started growling by the time I reached the bus stop. The kid in masks had fitted a piece of the puzzle I didn't want to see, but it was there, growling at me, right along with my innards. I was so preoccupied that I forgot to watch the bus door at each stop.
I knew I'd catch up with you eventually, Mandolin.
I didn't have to turn around. The bad breath told me who it was, along with the cold metal pressed against the back of my neck. How you doing, Rorsch? That new job working out for you?
Shut up, Mandolin. You listen, I talk.
I didn't answer. After all, he did say to shut up.
I'm talking to you, Mandolin.
Well, you said to shut up, Rorsch. I was ready for the next whack on the skull. My hand got between the gun barrel and my head as I pulled it out of Rorsch's hand.
Bastard! Nearly yanked my finger off!
I turned in my seat. As I turned, I noticed the rest of the people on the bus were very busy ignoring us. No surprises there. I flipped the gun around and hid it under my hand as I fixed Rorsch with a very unfriendly stare. Knock it off, Rorsch. I'm not going to kill you. The sleazeball was actually shedding tears. I said, knock it off. Not everybody is set up like you.
You mean it?
Yeah, I'm just a big softy. No, you and I are gonna pay a visit to a mutual acquaintance. His eyes narrowed.
Monahan?
No, we're going to see Schultz. Rorsch went white. knock it off. The same diesel-sized tough with the broken nose who had been there the last time I came by greeted us at Schultz's door. Must be a cushy job being a mobster's doorman. He jerked a well-chewed thumbnail at the chairs off to the side.
The boss is busy now. Grab a seat.
I kept an eye on Rorsch while we cooled our heels. He was growing twitchier, but the occasional shift of the bulge in my coat kept the crud on his leash. At least for now, he was more afraid of the gun in my hand than the Schultz behind the door. We sat like that for a couple of minutes, and then Broken Nose came back into the room.
The boss'll see you now.
Rorsch looked like he was ready to panic. I nudged him with the bulge in my jacket.
Papa Schultz is waiting. Let's move it, Walter.
Rorsch turned to look me in the eye. I found myself looking into the face of a man expecting to die.
Mandolin! Tony, you gotta let me go. The street talk was wrong. Schultz will have me killed. I wasn't working for him. I was working for Lucchesi.
I already knew that.
Old man Schultz stood in the doorway to his office. The sudden weight in my arms told me Rorsch had fainted. I didn't look to see if he had wet the floor.
Bobby, relieve Mr. Mandolin of his burden.
I let Bobby take Rorsch. Whatever fate was in store for him, he deserved it all. Hey, I've admitted I'm no angel. Once my hands were free, I stuck them into my pockets and nodded at old man Schultz.
Long time no see.
You give Lucchesi my message?
He knows.
Schultz looked in the direction Rorsch had been taken.
What do you want done with the cop?
Ex-cop.
Schultz didn't answer. I could see the wheels working behind his eyes. Once a cop, always a cop. The corruption Rorsch carried with him was just another facet of the job. And whacking a cop, even a corrupt fired cop, had to be done with due consideration.
I really don't care what you do with him. For what it's worth, I don't think he was even working for Lucchesi. At least, not as a made man. I think he was just a useful tool that's been discarded.
Figured that. He got greedy. That kind always does. You tell Lucchesi that—
I don't work for Lucchesi. Schultz smiled. I tensed.
You got guts, Mandolin. I can see why Antonio likes you. Anytime you want another job, you let me know.
And that was it. Interview over. I hit the street feeling very lucky. Not too many people in my line of work step all over Rupert Schultz's words and live to tell about it, much less walk away with a job offer. A long black Mercedes limo pulled up alongside me as I was hoofing it back to the bus stop. As I watched, the passenger window slid down, revealing one Antonio Lucchesi.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mandolin.
I didn't stop walking. Yeah, it is kind of nice out.
I understand you just spent some time with one of my competitors, Mr. Mandolin. I would be willing to pay you handsomely for some information regarding that meeting.
No.
What do you mean by no, Mr. Mandolin?
I mean no, Mr. Lucchesi. I don't reveal my information in a case at any price. When it's all said and done, the information will be public if the Chronicle thinks it's newsworthy. If not, give me a call. We'll talk. Antonio Lucchesi looked at me like a snake, deciding whether or not the mouse in front of it is worth eating.
Very good, Mr. Mandolin. That is exactly the answer I was looking for. Thank you. I will be in touch.
The mirrored window rolled up, shutting Lucchesi from my view in exchange for a reflection of my own gorgeous self. Admired by mobsters. Where did I go wrong? When I got back to my office, the phone was ringing. Yeah?
Where the hell have you been?
Gee, Pat, what a friendly voice. Did you miss me?
Madeline, what is it this time? I don't even know why I took your—
I had to hold the receiver away from my ear as Monahan roared out reasons why my mother should have drowned me at birth. When he finally settled down, I told him about my meeting with Rupert Schultz and why we probably did not have to worry about ex-Lieutenant Walter Rorsch anymore. I had to interrupt him a couple of times to get the entire story in. When I finished, all I could hear was someone breathing on the other end. Are you still there, Pat? Or did a dime-a-minute call girl take your place?
I've said it before, Mandolin.
Yeah, I know. I'm a piece of work.
Not to mention the luckiest son of a bitch on the planet. I want you down here. You said some things—
No, Pat. I've got all the pieces of the puzzle now. All I have to do is put them together, and I can't do that with you shouting at me.
Madeline, I'm not kidding. You get your ass down here, or I'll—
I grabbed a bite to eat at one of the nearby Italian eateries. After a meal of chicken parmesan with a liberal side of breadsticks, I felt considerably more human. My stomach loosened his belt a couple of notches and belched in appreciation. Signaling for the check, I drained the last of the house red and wiped my mouth with the napkin. I was thinking about adding some dessert when a heavy hand slapped down onto my shoulder.
Tony, darling, how have you been? I thought I saw you dining sans paramour through the window.
Evening, Frankie. Have a seat. Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks, sweetie. You always know how to sweep a girl off her feet.
Frankie groomed a drawn-in eyebrow with a pinky tip. I pushed my plate out of the way and rested my elbows onto the tablecloth. Why are you here, Frankie? I happen to know you can't stand Italian. Frankie plucked a breadstick from the container centered on the table.
Oh, tish-tosh, that is a foul slander. I simply adore classic Mediterranean cuisine.
He removed the scarf from his head and shook out his hair.
What do you think, lover?
Think? I couldn't think. Shock and horror had robbed me of thought. I froze. The face was Frankie. The hair was Roxanne. Frankie misread my reaction.
Stunning, is it not?
Unable to speak, I nodded. All the clues, the little details that had been nagging me for days came rushing in. I hated the result. I signaled for the waiter and ordered a refill of House Red. Frankie preened.
Why, Tony, are you going to ply moi with vino?
I gulped down the glass in one throw. I pointed a finger at the wig.
What are you doing wearing that?
More preening. Either he was completely clueless at reading people, or he just didn't care. For me, it was a toss-up. He smiled.
Tony, everyone knows how taken you were with Little Miss Driver.
I wished I had more wine. I could see Frankie wasn't play-acting.
Taken?
Mm-hmm. Just ask around. Ask anyone. They all saw you drooling.
His smile broadened.
I was surprised your pants didn't burst from the pressure.
I stood.
You've got it wrong, Frankie. I don't date clients, and I don't dance on the opposite side of the ballroom.
Making sure the waiter saw me, I slapped a couple of bills onto the tablecloth and got out of there. Frankie had never been that forthright, and it had shaken me to my toes. I needed one more piece to the puzzle, and in order to get it, I had to dance with the devil. I used a phone booth far enough from the bistro that I was sure Frankie wouldn't be around while I made the call. Lucchesi must have spread the word to his worker bees that a certain Mr. Mandolin was to be treated with due deference. I had never zipped through a phone screening that fast.
Mr. Mandolin, so you have decided to take me up on my offer after all?
Not exactly, but this is related to the case I'm working on.
Is it now?
I swallowed my pride.
Yes, it is, and in order to bring this mess to a successful conclusion, I need your help.
There, I said it, dammit. Lucchesi did not gloat. I suppose if you're the biggest shark in the pool, you don't have to.
All you need to do is ask, Mr. Mandolin. As I have stated, I am in your debt.
I need a lift to the driver estate, ASAP.
Certainly, Mr. Mandolin. Where can my driver find you?
Near Green and Powell, a couple of blocks north of Chinatown.
My car will be at that corner in a few minutes.
You gotta hand it to the cold fish. They don't waste time with the niceties. Lucchesi's limo arrived right on time. I suppose if your boss has a certain reputation, you don't allow yourself to make too many mistakes. A corpse has limited appeal rights. I had a lot of time to think on the way. The chauffeur was about as chatty as the steering wheel. Along the way, I kept putting the pieces to the puzzle together in different ways. None of them gave me joy. The limo slipped right on past the gate at the driver estate. Francis was not there to greet me, which caused a couple of brain cells to stop yawning. The young man who opened the limo door had the same color hair as driver's dead daughters. Seems the old man driver had a boy, about 15 from the look of him. I stuck out my hand as I left the limo.
Hello, the name's Mandolin. I'm here to see your father.
I figured the guess was good enough to give it a try.
My father's in his study. I'll take you there.
Where's Francis?
I don't know. My father must have sent him into the city yesterday. He does that sometimes.
The kid opened the door. Driver's kid led me down the hallway and into the study. Unlike the butler, the boy continued past the carpet and led me right up to the desk. You could have seated a family of 12 at it for Thanksgiving dinner with room to spare. Driver was busy inputting something into a laptop and did not look up as we approached.
Thank you, Danny. You may go. Please have a seat, Mr. Mandolin. We have some things to discuss.
I looked around. The wingback chairs I remembered still occupied their place over by the window. Unlike the desk of, say, a politician, no chairs held court before driver's desk, and I was about 30 years too old to squat on the floor. I chose one of the thickly padded armchairs off to the right of the seat of power. Driver still hadn't raised his eyes from the screen.
Go ahead, Mr. Mandolin, ask your question.
Huh?
You were wondering why I treated my son as if he were an employee of my household rather than the heir, are you not? I believe I know enough of your character to make the assumption.
This time, he glanced at me from behind the laptop screen. I had to admit the thought had crossed my mind. However, I also had noticed that the kid took the treatment in stride. Yeah, I was wondering that. I also figured it wasn't any of my business, as it had nothing to do with my case.
You're an astute man, Mr. Mandolin, and I believe far more intelligent than the facade you present to the world.
Thank you, I think.
Driver closed the laptop and stood. He crossed the gap between the desk and my choice of chairs.
I seem to remember offering you a brandy the last time I had you in my home.
He gestured toward a cabinet set against the wall.
May I tempt you successfully this time? It is a very fine Napoleon.
I shrugged. Lucchesi had some pretty fine stuff in his limo. Let the party continue. I'd probably pay for it later. Yeah, sure, why not? Sounds like it beats a shot and a beer at the Somersault.
Very droll, Mr. Mandolin. You have a fine sense of humor.
He pulled out that little silver remote and pressed a button. The door to the cabinet opened. The man had lost two daughters, and he was chatting as if we had just returned from tennis practice.
You will find this brandy to be full-bodied and mellow, tender and stylish, with a long, lingering, fine memory.
Sounds like a commercial.
Yes, I suppose it does. It is an old habit, Mr. Mandolin. I was the heir to my father's fortune, and he made me work for every penny. In some ways, I still intensely dislike him for what he put me through.
He swirled the deep amber fluid in its glass.
But then I experienced treasures like this.
I followed his example. The sniff did not tell me much. To me, booze pretty much smells like booze, whether it's clear, purple, or brown. My nose prefers sausage to pâté. Driver sipped and closed his eyes. Again, I followed suit. I had to admit, the stuff was good, smoother than I thought it would be. I had had the occasional brandy around Christmas time, but compared to Driver's Napoleon, that stuff had tripped across my tongue in hobnailed boots. This danced on ballerina slippers made of gauze. I opened my eyes.
Yes, I see you know what I mean.
My tongue told me I was a fool to have turned Driver down the first time. The flavor was intense, and a lingering aftertaste, almost better than the initial, rolled around in my mouth as if I was tasting a smell. Driver chose the other chair and held the snifter in his hand as if it had grown there.
So, Mr. Mandolin, why the visit? I must admit I am intrigued. It has been a while since Antonio Lucchesi contacted me personally.
That explained the open gate welcome. I believe I'm very close to finding out who murdered your daughters and a few others. I waited for the earth to open up and swallow me. Driver was one cold cat. He and Lucchesi could have come from two sides of the same mold.
I see. And you believe you will find something here to complete your solution to the puzzle?
Yes, I do.
And what is that?
In for a penny, in for a pound. I need to take a look at your butler's room.
Very good, Mr. Mandolin. Let's go see what we can find.
I stopped being surprised by Driver's reactions to my questions. If recent history were any indication, he would have calmly sat through the 1906 earthquake, wondering about future land speculation. Francis's apartment occupied a corner of the mansion on the other side of the kitchen. Driver treated his butler well. The old man lived a lot better than I did. Driver stood just outside the door. I suppose it would not do for the master to cross over into servant territory.
May I ask what you were searching for, Mr. Mandolin?
A clue, Mr. Driver. Another piece to the puzzle. My gut is telling me that what I need is hidden here. The fact that your kid met me instead of Francis is a part of it. I'd bet my sweet Aunt Petunia's gallbladder on it.
Very well, Mr. Mandolin. Please don't let me keep you. Continue on with your search. I'm sure your aunt needs her gallbladder.
Pay dirt appeared about two-thirds of the way through the room.
Bingo!
Driver was so interested, he almost cracked an expression.
What did you find?
I lifted the shirt off its hanger. You might say, Mr. Driver, that I've picked up his scent. Billy Bunty watched impassively as I chewed. One of his dogs, washed down with an ice cold lager, was just what my battered body needed. I swallowed my mouthful of sausage and then reached for the brew.
What you been doing, Tony? I ain't seen you that hungry for a year almost.
I told him, between glugs, about the case and my suspicions. Lucchesi's limo had dropped me off at home, where I picked up a few toys and odds makers. Then I took a bus that put me near Masks, where I spent a long night banging around inside and around dumpsters. The nice warm buzz I had developed from driver's brandy vanished about halfway through the second dumpster. I found nothing outside of the usual assortment of footprints the city's underclass leaves as a trail. By the time dawn arrived and cold cocked my eyeballs, I was tired, sore, and surly enough to growl at a nun. But most of the surliness was because I was finding nothing to allay my suspicions. All the pieces were fitting together into a big red arrow pointing toward a diva in size 13 pumps.
Wow! Really? Are you sure? Frankie's such a nice guy.
I'm pretty sure, Billy. Not 100%, but not far off either. There's still a last piece I have to check out. That's why I need to find Frankie.
Must be pretty serious for you to be looking for Frankie. Usually it's you looking for a way out.
Yeah, well, today's different. Have you seen him around?
Nope, not lately. You check around Soma?
Not yet. I was hoping I didn't have to. Frankie might be a tease according to Billy, but some of the folks he hung around with were dead serious.
Hey, Tony, you know, different strokes.
There's different, and then there's different, Billy. Give me another one, straight up. I munched as I waited for the bus to the south of Market District. Frankie had said something about a competition. The wig, the bag of cosmetics, it all added up. The question was, up to what? The bus dropped me off at the corner of Folsom and 8th, right smack dab in the middle of the Miracle Mile and the heart of black leather territory. Come nightfall, the streets fill with what looks like a village people convention. A little over 30 gay bars, sex clubs, and restaurants offering their house special in the back rooms surround the neighborhood. It's kind of like a gazelle and a lion learning to live with each other in the same veldt. I looked at my watch. It was a few minutes before 6, so I had time to check the ads on the bars before the crowds hit. I had trudged for what felt like a couple of miles before I finally found a likely place. As I looked at the neon sign, I shook my head. I should have thought of the place as my first try. The name said it all.
The Stud.
There was a marquee to the left of the front door with a garishly colored poster tacked up behind the glass. The poster advertised a drag review contest with headliner status for the bar's new show being the prize. That had to be Frankie's big chance and the reason for the new look. The centerpiece of the poster was a photo of a drag queen made up like Cleopatra. Around him stood a half dozen men as buff as Chippendale dancers wearing nothing more than a series of strategically placed black leather straps festooned with chromed studs. As I studied the poster, lost in my thoughts, the door to the Stud opened. The guy that came through was Frankie's size, but corpse pale. Heavy eyeshadow gave his face almost a raccoon look. He wore his hair slicked back to where it was more helmet than do. He had enough metal sticking through various portions of his face that I doubted his ability to pass a TSA inspection at any airport. He was dragging a folding A-frame sign with him. I could see a message, neatly painted on one of the sign's sides. Contest tonight, in red letters.
Doors don't open till 8.
Then he stopped and looked at me.
You're new.
Yeah, I'm a friend of Frankie's. Is he in?
I see. Didn't know he went for the rough and ready type.
Mama Mandolin must have been spinning in her grave. I figured I might as well rev up the RPMs. Yeah, you should see him in a nightie. Ooh-hoo. Ha, is he in the back?
Not yet. I swear, some of these prima donnas.
What can you do? You nurse them when they're sick?
Don't talk to me about being sick. Just last week, Derek, he came down with a raging cold, but did I get a whisper of thanks for the trips to the pharmacy? For the hot soup and for the hand-holding?
Of course you didn't. Mama Mandolin's coffin ought to be generating a few thousand megawatts right about now.
Damn right I didn't.
metal face smiled at me. He had braces as well.
It's so nice to chat with someone who knows what suffering is about. Are you sure you and Frankie are serious?
As a heart attack.
I thought so. The good ones are always taken.
About Frankie.
Down the alley, turn left and up the stairs to the stage door. You can wait for Mr. Starlet in the dressing room.
Metalface waved a hand toward the alley just at the end of the stud's frontage. As I left him, he was pinching the bridge of his nose.
Serenity now. Serenity now.
If the overdose of chintz and satin didn't tell me I'd found Frankie's dressing room, the cloying cloud of perfume shouted the message at full volume. Mediterranean Nights tromped all over my sinuses with eye-watering intensity. I saw one of the $450 bottles sitting to the right of the mirror next to a toolbox sporting a very serviceable padlock. That begged a question. Where did a cross-dresser the size of a Niner lineman get the wear-all to afford stinky juice of that caliber? Leaning toward the dressing room door, I listened for footsteps. Hearing none, I pulled out a neat little set of lockpicks Monahan would have had a stroke over and went to work. I managed to pick the lock just as someone looked into the room. It was a guy. Big surprise, but not Metal Face. This one had very short, dark brown hair and a thick mustache with the ends teased into points.
All right, who are you and where is Frankie?
He caught me stuck into a crouch halfway between the now unlocked toolbox and the chair. I still had the lockpick in my hand. He stepped into the dressing room and put both hands onto his hips.
Where is Frankie?
I could smell the perfume on him. Mediterranean Nights. Thankfully, he had not noticed the lockpick or didn't know what it was. I decided to go with what worked on Metalface and faced him down, raging queen to raging queen. So, I straightened and folded my arms over my chest. You're the one. That took Mustache back a bit.
Why?
I knew Frankie was cheating on me, but I couldn't prove it, so I came here to catch him in the act with his little bit of fluff, and here you are.
Oh, hey, now, you got it all wrong. Frankie and I aren't fooling around. I'm the stage manager. I just...
Just what?
Nothing. Frankie's a little late. I was just checking.
Probably best to keep up the act. I moved from outrage into forgiveness.
It's okay, hon. I really must work on my jealousy. It gets the best of me sometimes. You know how these actors are.
Oh my God. Derek had another one of his little spats this morning, all because I used a pinch of his bath salts without asking. I mean, really, it's not like they were designed by Prada, for heaven's sakes.
With a last knowing smile, he left, and I collapsed into the chair.
Has anybody actually seen Frankie?
Using the time, I opened the lid of the toolbox. All I saw was an assortment of high-end makeup and applicators. Okay, maybe the pieces weren't falling together.
Tony, darling! You came to witness my triumph on the stage!
I looked up and there stood Frankie in all his diva glory. He had on the red wig and his favorite hot pink feather boa. Long, artificial fingernails, colored to match the boa, shone as he waved his hands. His bulk fought against a fluorescent green cocktail dress that was too small.
Actually, Frankie, I'm here for something else.
The look he gave me should have come in a plain brown wrapper.
Oh my. Oh, Tony. This is so sudden.
I thought you were the one killing the girls, Frankie. I used a lockpick to break into your case there to find what I thought was the last piece of evidence.
Frankie's expression changed to one best described as hurt. Puppy.
Tony,
I'm sorry, Frankie, but your behavior these last few days has been suspicious at best.
What has been going on?
The hurt puppy expression vanished, replaced by one of sad humor.
Tony.
He didn't move. He just stood there in his oversized green pumps, staring at me. I had no idea what was going on in Frankie's mind. I just plowed straight on, forced to complete the damnable confession.
Yes, I thought I'd figured out the whole thing, Francis. I even found this shirt in your closet. Mediterranean Nights is a scent that stays with you. What I haven't figured out is why.
Frankie shook his head, and then his whole stance and demeanor changed to that of an efficient butler. A butler wearing the costume of a flaming diva.
Yes, that would be the question, would it not?
And?
Tony, what am I going to do with you?
Explain a few things? Are you Driver's butler?
No. That is my father.
But he said... Can I ask you a question, Francis?
Of course, sir.
Do you have any family living in the city?
No, sir, I do not.
Oh.
As it turns out, the truth was so cliched that I should have seen it coming the first time. Old school to the core, Butler Francis had no son since Frankie had accepted who he was. The shirt was nothing more than evidence that even a conservative to the core father would hug a raging switch hitter son at least once in a while. Frankie's jibing at me over pasta was nothing more than some harmless jealousy. The only problem was, where did that leave my case? Thoroughly confused as well as disgusted with myself, I left the stud and took a walk. That crazy idea of the nerds in love kept coming back to me, and I kept shoving it away. Vampires were the stuff of Hollywood and horror writers. They belonged between the pages of poorly written pulp novels, not on my city streets. The problem was, there was also the hard evidence Ignatova had mentioned. Anticoagulant, saliva, and biotoxin. All that was something a killer could have administered through a syringe. The problem was, where was the syringe? Where was the evidence of a syringe being used? Trixie's attacker had been described as having bitten her or something. Where was the something? Or was the killer also a freak with a vampire obsession? That seemed more likely, but where also did that leave my case? My thoughts continued to whirl as I walked. My gray matter wasn't working, and my sixth sense was on vacation. Home, food, and bed. That was the ticket.
What the?
I beat feet down the sidewalk, down the alley to my left. I pulled the Colt out of my coat pocket. Slowing to a walk, I eased along the edge of the alley to where it widened into a delivery yard. Peeking around the corner, I saw a figure in an overcoat hunched over a body up against the delivery entrance of the building. It wore a wide-brimmed hat, and the collar of the coat was pulled up. The yellow light of an old industrial lamp over the door cast the scene into something out of a B-horror flick.
Step away from the body, freak!
I sidestepped out of hiding, the Colt levered out in front of me, just the way Monahan would have done it. The figure stood. Its arms held away from its sides. Good. Now, what was the next step? Oh, yeah.
All right. Now turn around slowly and keep your hands where I can see them.
The figure turned. Now that I had time, I could see that the coat was far better quality than the rag I wore. Pretty good quality gloves covered the hands, and the hat was a high-end fedora. As far as freaks go, this one was very well-dressed. The shoes looked like they cost a couple of C-notes easy. What had I run across, a Brooks Brothers mugger? When the face turned, I wished I had. The shape and the size may have been human, but the face was not. Well, the eyes, what I could see under the hat, were all right, and the nose, but the mouth. Saliva dribbled out in quantity to match a bull mastiff, and the tongue. The tongue was longer than anything Gene Simmons could brag about, and humans don't have tongues with individually waving tentacles. I have to admit, the sight caused me to drop my gun. The thing rushed me. I got shouldered aside like a rag doll, and it vanished around the corner. I stared in its direction for a long, long moment.
I gotta call Paul. Come on, come on.
Hello?
Paul, it's me, Tony Mandolin.
Who?
Mandolin! Tony Mandolin! Paul, I need to ask you about vampires.
Oh, Tony.
Hooray. Recognition at last.
Ursula and I have been studying the blood samples of the victims. No mold or fungi of any kind. But there has been some very interesting results.
Good, Paul, good. But I have to ask you about
No electrolytes at all. We would have seen that if the blood had been checked for more than just drugs.
What? Wait, Paul, what are you talking about?
The blood, Tony. The blood that was drawn from each of the victims. It was all completely free of electrolytes.
Electrolytes? You mean like in sports drinks?
Exactly. The common electrolytes that are measured with blood testing include sodium, potassium, chloride, and bicarbonate. Without a sufficient amount of any of them, the result can be fatal. Besides that, we also have the biotoxin.
Biotoxin. Yeah, I remember that being mentioned.
The material tested similar to the neurotoxins of some elapids. It could also be compared with curare, or with the autoantibodies in myasthenia gravis. The neurotoxins block the stimulus transmission from nerve cell to muscle and cause paralysis.
Are you telling me that something bit or stung these girls?
That hideous dribbling tongue hovered in my mind's eye.
Oh, most definitely. The material required for an injection is either too controlled or too rare for any other possible conclusion.
Paul, if there was such a thing as real vampires, what would they look like?
Oh, I have no idea. That was merely a theory.
But you and Ignatova...
No, just a theory, but good fun nonetheless.
So what caused this to happen to these girls if not a vampire?
Good question. You need to talk to Max.
Max turned out to be Maxwell Keebler. Yes, just like the elves and the cookies. Unlike the elves, Max did not live in a tree, and from the look of him, did not eat too many cookies. He was almost gaunt. Max did, however, have a passion for the weird and weirder. Paul and Max belonged to the same club, a fantasy guild that discussed, among other things, the latest offerings from the assorted writers of fiction involving vampires. And because of the current fad, there are literally dozens of them. Looking at Max, I could easily picture him holding court in Bloodsucker Drag, discussing in depth the latest Stoker-style bodice ripper. Max owned a used bookstore on Geary near the Presidio. The largest selection consisted, of course, of fantasy, sci-fi, and occult offerings in assorted conditions. With the nearby university campus, it was no wonder the shop was thriving. After introducing myself as a friend of Paul's, Max thawed a bit and agreed to talk.
So, what do you want to know about the Nosophoros?
What? Max smiled. It was not an attractive sight, more like being grinned at by a skull with skin.
Nosophorus is the Greek word which means plague carrier. It evolved into an old Slavonic word, nosuferatu. You may recall the original silent film with the same name. Nosferatu is a synonym for the word vampire.
What would a vampire look like?
Depends on which writer you read. The undead, according to most filmmakers these days, are model beautiful, both male and female, with shape-shifting ability. In Nosferatu, the vampire, unlike those of today, was quite the opposite. Bald, humpbacked, and ravaged with the weight of its sin.
I could feel my brow wrinkling. This wasn't really getting me where I needed. I decided to plow in at full throttle. Okay,
You may think this is really weird, and you have every right to throw me out if you do. But what if I told you that I think I saw a real vampire?
Really? What did it look like?
So I told Max what I saw and when. After that, I went on to describe to Max what Ignatova and Paul had said about the substances found in the wounds and the condition of the blood. If Monahan found out, there'd be hell to pay, but in for a penny.
Wow. Wow. This is far out. And you actually saw Nosoforos feeding?
Several women are dead because of this thing's feeding habits.
Yes, right. Good point there. Excuse me.
Max got up to see if the customer needed help or just wanted to dry off for a while. Outside, the drizzle had become a downpour. As Max chatted with his customer, I heard footsteps come up behind me.
Hmm? Don't get up, Mr. Mandolin. May I join you?
I looked up into a face that belonged on one of the BBC mysteries. The man looking back down at me with an easy smile was middle-aged, moderate in size, and very well-dressed. He had one of those faces you assign to the real movie stars, not the Botox body-sculpted younger generation. I gestured to the chair Max had been using. Yeah, sure. See? I can do Urbane as well as the next guy.
Most kind.
The man took the chair and then regarded me, his hands folded over his crossed knees.
You are an interesting fellow, Mr. Mandolin. Did you know that?
For some reason, every instinct I had told me not to be clever with this guy. I just shook my head.
Good answer. My, but you are going to be an interesting opponent.
Opponent?
We are going to be involved in a contest, Mr. Mandolin. You and I are the opposing sides of a much-anticipated chess match. Allow me to introduce myself, Mr. Mandolin, as I obviously know who you are. My name is Simon. No family name, no title, merely Simon. By my attire, I obviously have wealth. The extents of my holdings are none of your concern and have no bearing on this little contest. You may close your mouth now.
Oh, hello, Simon. That first edition Bram Stoker is on the way. I was able to find one with an authentic autograph.
Excellent, Maxwell. By the way, you don't mind if I continue my conversation with my friend here, do you? I would very much appreciate being left quite alone while we speak.
Wow! You got to see a vampire feeding and your friends with Simon? Boy, do you have a life.
Max nodded to Simon and headed to the back of the shop. Simon looked at me, and every hair stood up on my body.
Are you quite all right? Do I need to postpone our little endeavor?
Simon reached out and felt my cheek.
You feel a bit clammy. Is it a cold or the cold?
What are you talking about? I've never seen you in my life.
No, you have seen me. Feeding, as our mutual friend Maxwell has attested.
That was you?
Simon the Vampire, at your service.
You killed those girls.
Guilty as charged.
I started to rise. Literally, in a blink, Simon's hand was on my knee, holding me into the chair. I tried to move the hand. No dice.
Mr. Mandolin, we are not done here. Not yet. You have several questions, and I have answers. Having a fully prepared opponent makes the game far more invigorating. You are no match for me physically, that's obvious. No Homo edibilis is. Neither are you a match for me economically. Not even if Mr. Driver delivers on his promised fee for the capture of the one who dispatched his very delicious daughters.
I tried again to get up, and the pressure on my knee became a sudden sharp pain.
You are not going to get away with this.
Oh, but I already have, Mr. Mandolin. Now settle yourself. Anchors hard on both the cardiovascular and digestive systems.
Simon released my knee and settled back into his aristocratic pose.
Now, ask your questions. We have quite a lot to do, you and I.
Do you really expect me to believe that you're an honest-to-God vampire?
Simon winced.
Please! Mr. Mandolin, your language. Yes, I do expect such of you. You have a reputation for being a pragmatist, and I'm relying on your famous dogged determination to see things through to their eventual end. Therefore, I certainly do expect you to believe me, and I also expect you to perform well in our game. Now, before we go any further, let me rid your mind of any of the rather insipid fantasies the literary profession has spread about me and my kind. Having clichés is one thing, but being considered a cliché is quite another matter.
That sounds like you have integrity. I'm surprised.
Touché, Mr. Mandolin. Well done. Yes, I do have integrity. My kind all do, in varying degrees, of course. And not the same sort as possessed by Homo edibilis.
That's the second time you've used that term.
Homo edibilis. Edible human, as opposed to Homo predatorius, predator human. The separation is quite pronounced, even though if you trace our lineage, we do eventually share the same ancestor. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, clichés. We do not have courts in assorted colors. We have no royalty as such, and neither do we descend from an ancient tribal leader who at one time in the past angered him. Neither do we drink blood. We subsist on
electrolytes.
Exactly! Well, in addition to a few other things, but you are right, Mr. Madeline. I am impressed. You really do your homework. Now, as I was saying, we do not sleep in coffins. We do not shrink in horror from sunlight, holy water, crucifixes, or garlic. I, in fact, find the taste of garlic quite enjoyable. That last young lady must have had Italian, for example. The delicious fluid flowing through humanity's veins has unique qualities similar to those of fine wines. Each has its own personality, its own attributes.
How about silver bullets?
You are particularly single-minded, aren't you, Mr. Mandolin? For the sake of full disclosure, yes, a silver bullet would have an effect, but no more than a bullet constructed out of any other malleable metal. I have no metal allergy, per se. Whether or not any of my colleagues do is none of my business. My kind is not sociable in that way. But if you're going to focus on the means of killing my kind, we are vulnerable to far fewer forms of damage than the general human herd beast, but there are techniques. Fire, for example. We burn just like you do. Drowning is another, but I am an excellent swimmer. Impact, say, being run over by a large car or a train, both possible methods. Decapitation, electrocution, poisoning, all potentially lethal, in the proper dosage, of course.
So if I was able to cut your head off?
Why, then you would win! Now, here is how our little contest is going to work.
Max interrupted by putting a bag of fish and chips under Simon's nose. He sprinkled some more malt vinegar as he talked.
Simon, you have to try these. They're from that new shop on the corner. The fish is so fresh, it's practically swimming.
Simon recoiled so violently, I thought he was going to tip over his chair.
No! I mean... No, thank you, Maxwell. I appreciate your kind offer, but I have already dined. Now, please honor my request for privacy.
Sure thing, Simon.
Something in the fish and chips had repelled the vampire to the point where he'd lost his composure. I filed it away for later use.
This is becoming tiresome, and I have better things with which to occupy my time.
Simon straightened his coat.
I am going to continue my forays into your herd. You are going to try to stop me using any means at your disposal. If you make headway, and I will know when you do, I will leave clues for your use. If you fail to come any closer to stopping my hunt, I will use you as my next chosen prey. Do we have an understanding?
You bet we do. As far as I'm concerned, I'm looking at a dead man.
Excellent, Mr. Mandolin. You keep that attitude. Good day.
He touched his forehead with a fingertip and left the store. I sat in the chair for a long time. How had it gotten to this? Where did Mama Mandolin's baby boy go wrong? I was supposed to be tracking down cheating husbands, lost jewelry, and the odd bail jumper, not getting into a war of strategy with a freaking vampire. Not sure as what to do, I went back to my office and picked up the phone.
Monahan.
Hi, Pat. It's Mandolin.
What's with you? You sound like hell.
Oh, good. Then I must be getting better. I went on and told Monahan the whole sordid story, including the challenge Simon had issued. I finished by expressing my willingness to be locked up for my own good and society's, since it was obvious I was no longer one of the sane ones.
What? Are you serious?
Hell, I don't know, Pat.
Tell you what, once I get this paperwork in front of me turned in, I'll meet you at Patty's. Sounds like you could use the scotch even more than me.
I'd already put a couple of pints into me by the time Monahan showed.
Sorry, paperwork got to be more than I thought it would.
I signaled for a third pint of beer.
It's all right. I started without you.
Barkeep! Scotch!
All right, Mandolin. What's eating you?
I would have figured you'd already know the answer to that one.
Probably, but I'd like to hear it for myself.
All right. Here's what's chewing on my insides. One, this guy kills two girls who never knew him. They didn't even move in circles remotely near his unless it was by chance. Two, he chooses the weirdest method I've ever heard to kill them while making everyone think they've died of an overdose. And then he tracks me down and tries to convince me he's a goddamned vampire.
Could be deep-seated class hatred. Yeah, the driver girls did live in a pretty rarefied atmosphere. Maybe the undead angle is a sort of a shtick and affectation.
That doesn't explain the other two girls, does it?
No, it doesn't.
This was new. Monahan agreeing with me had to be one of the signs of the apocalypse. So what do I do? He said he was going to continue his hunting, and if I didn't play along with this contest, I was going to be next on the menu.
Come on down to the station. Sit with the sketch artist. At the very least, we can circulate his likeness and see if that gets us somewhere. I want you to lay low. Find some place to stay where he can't find you. If you can't be found, you can't be threatened.
I suppose.
Look, Mandolin. Tony. Sometimes things happen for no reason. And you beating yourself up trying to find one won't do you or anyone else any good. I've been a cop for over 20 years, and I've seen more than my share of bad guys doing bad things for just because. I never found an answer as to why, so I just got used to being satisfied I stopped them. You should do the same. In spite of how the majority of Metro treats you, you have a reputation of getting the job done. Let us clean this one up for you.
Thanks, Pat. I appreciate that.
You're still going after him, aren't you?
Like you said, Pat, I've got a reputation. Pat just shook his head as I walked out.